news and reports. A website for those that love cars and motorsport.
www.0157.org.
The website of Globecast Radio.
Hello, good evening, and welcome. As a very famous political commentator used to say, it's just after 8 o'clock in the UK. I'm John Hindhoff, live from Wellingborough, and Tim Greer is where this week, Tim?
This week I will be mostly in London.
Another 2 hours coming up as we have a chat and some interviews and some of your questions and comments on last week's and previewing next week's Motorsport Weekend. And on a packed show tonight, so packed I can barely get my words out.
You nearly said 4 hours there, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I did. People have said, why can't we be on more often? And I got an email about that this week. Why can't midweek Motorsport be 4 hours? We'd be dead.
There's a good reason for it.
We just don't have the time.
It takes us long enough to do 2 hours.
It does, to put it all together, absolutely. You don't think this thing is just thrown together in the moments before 8 o'clock in the West?
You turn up at 7:59 and go on air. Well, last week we did, obviously.
On a packed show tonight, Tim, we have...
We'll be looking back at the Formula One race at Malaysia at the weekend.
Do you know, I got up to watch that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Having trouble sleeping? Or were you just excited about your Easter eggs?
8 o'clock on a Sunday morning is actually a very good time to have a Grand Prix, I think. And besides which, I put it on Sky Plus, so I actually only got downstairs at 8:30 and kept fast-forwarding through the ad breaks, and by the time they were going across to the driver's conference at the end of the race, I was spot-on back on time.
Fantastic. Also, we're going to be looking back at the first round of the Champ Car World Series, not powered by Ford. Presented by Bridgestone.
Or anybody.
And given the number of punctures, Bridgestone might want to disassociate their name even further.
The
great circuit, though, isn't it?
It was a very good straight circuit, 2.5 miles, just over 2.5 miles, wasn't it? A very... How can we put it? It wasn't a race that flowed. That I found it very difficult to watch. Helped that I'm afraid that was hindered in some respects by the most bizarre timing of ad breaks I've ever seen by Eurosport, and that says something. More of that later.
We'll be looking back at the opening round of the British Superbike Championship.
Brands Hatch Grand Prix Circuit, always a good place to start any series, and a couple of surprises there as well.
And we'll be looking forwards as well, of course. This weekend, three new championships begin.
Oh, okay, nice, sorry.
In GP2 series.
Bahrain. Yes, that's your area of expertise, that, so we'll give you 10 minutes to talk about that.
The Michelin Porsche Super Cup.
Suppose that could be my area of expertise. Rear engine sports cars.
So.
Yes, okay. Well, we can talk about a few people. We have some friends in that series, I'm sure, haven't we?
Quite a few now.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's the Le Mans series as well.
LMS.
Yeah.
This is the world's greatest series that nobody knows about.
It's packed with talented drivers who
it's
all have
big names, mate. Yes, big names. And unfortunately, nobody goes to see it. Nobody watches it on television. And the organisers aren't interested in changing that.
And also Jean de Portadas, who is quite a long name.
That's quite a big name, yes.
But notable for another reason. He's racing in that this year.
Mm. Go on, carry on.
Features, Nick Damon and... that other bloke, Declan Brennan, he'll be here to talk about...
In Worcester, Massachusetts. We've moved him back now, because I keep calling it Winchester.
He'll be talking about the Pepsi 300 at Nashville Super Speedway.
Was that last weekend or next weekend?
That was the weekend that's just gone, yes.
Oh, really? That's where they give away the guitar as a prize. It's a tradition thing. They used to do it with the IRL race there as well.
I see. We might also be talking a little bit about what's happening or not at Kentucky Speedway.
Okay. That's all still to come in the next 2 hours. Don't wait a couple of weeks while the pale imitations of Midweek Motorsport are browsing through our back catalogue for programme ideas and interviewees. It's the original and best. Hear it first here every Wednesday on Globecast Radio. And we'll be back with the Motorsport headlines and Tim Gray next.
Radio. All the week's motorsport news, Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
And Tim Gray has the latest motorsport headlines. Tim, what do you have for us?
Well, we're going to start with some Formula One news, and then once we're joined... Why do you laugh? It's not as if we always start with Formula One news.
It is!
It's the only thing that counts, John. I know you don't believe that, but it's true.
Sorry, can I just have a snooze?
No, you have a snooze. Go on, then.
Rumours abounding that Honda have approached Mr. Ross Brawn.
Well, they need something, don't they?
Yes.
Because let's be honest, you know, it's not like it's a bit bad or slightly poor or oh dear. It's more like, oh my God, Brackley is currently covered by the biggest dark cloud in the history of Formula One dark clouds, because they're being comprehensively beaten by the Super Aguris, which is last year's car allegedly, obviously. And a couple of the driver they sacked 2 years ago, they had to find a team for, and their test drivers they wouldn't promote up. And they're now saying they're going to come up with a complete new car in Canada, which, from my knowledge, is at least more than halfway through the season. So it means, yes, we're quite happy to trundle around being 12th for half a year as one of the major works teams. So basically, they've done something terribly wrong. And, you know, the team is suffering from a lack of direction. Obviously, they got rid of Jeff Wears over a year ago, who had the title of technical director. They didn't be replacing anybody. And they seem to have fallen into this sort of trap where they don't have anybody really directing. A nice guy, though, Mr. Fry is. You do get the impression that, quite frankly, he doesn't... I don't think he's got that driving thing.
He's got to do something, though, hasn't he? Because otherwise he's going to be in threat.
Oh, he's got it. His head... Yeah, the guillotine is primed and ready to go, absolutely.
Were they beaten by their old cars again at the weekend?
No, the old cars beat them in qualifying, but in the race, they all four of them were relatively poor. And I think it was 11th, 12th, 13th and 16th, I think, overall.
Ross Brawn, however, is still got some tenuous links to Ferrari.
Well,
not
tenuous. What it is basically he has no contract. It's been confirmed this weekend here. There is no contractual link with Ferrari. There's nothing that says, we have first dibs or anything like that. He's out of contract. But apparently there is a gentleman's agreement, which we all know is worth nothing in Formula One. And, you know, the idea that he would perhaps want to come back. And I think, really, you know, it really depends. You know, if Ferrari have many more tactically inept weekends like last weekend, then perhaps they might notice how much they're missing him. How much that was due to technical direction, how much it was due to the fact that Felipe Massa doesn't know how to brake to get past someone, I don't know.
Was just embarrassing, wasn't it?
If a rookie and a team leader go together, you have a rookie mistake, you do kind of expect the rookie to make it.
Going back to the story, Ross Brawn going to Honda, wasn't there some discussion that he would only go to Ferrari if he got Jean Todt's job? Now, Jean Todt has moved sideways, but I am still seeing him at Grand Prix, Nick.
Well, that's it. I mean, he said Jean Todt is now, I think, is head of the entire Ferrari organisation, including the road cars officially, and obviously half of Italy as well. I think it's a difficult situation there. Ross obviously wants to, I think Ross is looking for a challenge, he's looking for something that's a step up, and let's be honest, it's certainly a challenge at Honda. This whole thing has shades of obviously when Bobby Rahal tried to recruit Adrian Newey back in the Jaguar days.
Correct.
And, that very nearly went through. Fell on its sword because Ron managed to pull a blank at the end. And basically, it ended up bringing down Bobby Rahal and indirectly also ended Jaguar's involvement because they kind of lost the will to live, basically. It's a very good idea to get Ross Brawn. I don't think any team would not want him. But, you know, there are elements of desperation seeking to Honda and how they've managed to get it quite so wrong. Off what was they were very strong at the end of the lot. I think they were the second best car actually on points scored in the last 6-7 races of 06. So they managed to just completely muck it all up.
And of course, that very strong car from 06 now in the hands of Takuma Sato, who was up to his old tricks again at Malaysia, wasn't he?
He wasn't very popular, was he? No.
Not with Tony Liuzzi.
Crazy move and that sort of thing. But I think it's there was quite a melee in those first couple of laps, to be honest. And I thought that that was a little bit unfair. I mean, Adrian Sutil, was saying that he hit come and hit him before he then hit Jenson Button. It just looked to me like someone going far too fast in the corner wasn't a gap. I mean, I think the interesting thing, I think what we did see though, was quite impressive. There's some very impressive overtaking by Alexander Wurz, who obviously hasn't lost his racecraft despite not racing for 5 years. But the lower teams really didn't cover themselves in glory. I mean, both spikers were gone within 6 laps, I think. And the Toro Rosso didn't look very good at all. I mean, Tonio qualified well and then did nothing. And Scott Speed, well, I think the opinions of this program about Scott Speed are well documented for many months.
Yeah.
Inappropriately
named Scott Speed.
Years ago,
yeah, I mean, you turn around and basically, you know, the top three all did well. Raikkonen's car apparently was running compromised aerodynamics to get the cooling in after we discussed last week about the potential for problems with the engines. They actually decided to keep the engine, not take the 10-place penalty, and you know, open up more air ducts, basically, to keep it cool. Obviously, Alonso won. Hamilton was brilliant. Felipe made a complete cock-up in one corner, which effectively really... Because if he got past Lewis at that point, there's a very good chance he'd have won the race. Because it was only 7 or 8 seconds that Raikkonen was ahead... that Alonso was ahead. And Heifel did very well. So you had 4 or 5 drivers did very well. I mean, Nico Rosberg, going back to the young guns coming here, has really done very, very well in the first two races, largely unnoticed because of the massive hype about Lewis Hamilton. He's driven 2 superb races as Nico, and is definitely one of the best drivers of the year.
Well, from one team in turmoil in Honda, or one Japanese team in turmoil, we move to another Japanese team in turmoil, Toyota.
Well, these are scoring points. These are getting the final phase of qualifying.
Having said that, had a disaster last year in Bahrain, and Jarno Trulli says that this year isn't going to be any better at all.
Jarno Trulli has become prophet of doom recently, hasn't he? You don't see anything. The kind of chirpy, things are looking great, things are having. Jarno is a very nice guy, and we actually meet him. He's a very positive vintner, as of course he is now, being a wine grower. But it's very, very odd in that, you know, all you see from him is, oh, it's not going to do this, it's not going to do that. I mean, he qualified, I think, about 7th or 8th. He didn't get the best getaway, but he actually got some points. Ralph got some points in the previous Grand Prix. You know, they've got the 5th or 6th best car, and reliability is very good. So what do they expect? I mean, they haven't got the issues that Honda have where they're embarrassing themselves. I mean, they're making the third part of the final part of qualifying. You know, they're faster than the Red Bulls. They're faster than, obviously, as I mentioned before, the Honda and everyone else. You know, they're just not as good as the top 4 teams. And with the reliability it is, you know, obviously, back in the mid-70s, when half the cars broke down, that was fine. But now, you've got a real problem.
They're expecting an aero update for that Toyota in Barcelona.
Well, I mean, everyone will have... I mean, that's the big... There'll be a lot of updates coming into the European season. We've got a big gap after Bahrain, of course, because of the removal of the San Marino Grand Prix, and then it not being replaced as expected. So now we've got a 4-week gap. So you're going to see a lot of cars with... You know, they say significant upgrades, but really more sort of 2 races worth of upgrades rather than one. So, yeah, they'll be looking at about 0.2 of a second. But all the teams, well, bar Honda, who are now building their new car for Canada, will have upgrades. So, you know, it'll be interesting how much the status quo changes. I would think that, you know, what's interesting is whether McLaren, who obviously have got closer to Ferrari, can keep that up. Because, you know, we said this way back out when we knew that the reorganization was happening, and that Michael and Ross were going, and Kimi was going, so they would hit the ground running. But whether they could divert the car as well was the question. Now, after 2 races, you can't tell, because the second race was blighted by engine problems for Raikkonen and brain fade for Massa. But it did seem to be less of a gap, and therefore, you know, over the next... Bahrain, again, is an interesting circuit. It's a week after the last one, but what the real season does start when they've had 4 weeks testing in Europe, and they then go to Barcelona.
OK, let's move further towards the front of the grid, and McLaren.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish newspapers are reporting that there could be some tension in that team between the two drivers, and the fact that Alonso's people think that Lewis is getting some favouritism.
You see, do you not feel that Spanish papers need to write a story about Fernando for no discernible reason?
They quote Martin Whitmarsh as saying, Alonso should not become forgotten.
Well, he won the race.
Well, exactly.
You see, this is the interesting thing, because
it's nonsense.
If you actually knew Fernando or looked at Fernando is not someone who courts media attention. He's not really that bothered. What he's after is winning races and being, you know, the focal point of the team. And Lewis is doing a brilliant job, but Lewis has been beaten twice by Fernando, both in qualifying and the race. He's done for his first two races, they're fantastic. I mean, but the fact is that Lewis knows that, you know, unwritten or written, he is playing shotgun. He is playing shotgun for Fernando this year. So it's not, and all he has to do is do what he's doing, which is to be solid. And, you know, I think the issue is with next year, because I think next year, yes, they're going to start. They'll be definitely from equal phases the whole way through. But Fernando is the focus of McLaren. It's very nice for them. It's very nice for Fernando as well, have his teammate doing so well. He takes the pressure off him in many ways. And there's no way that Ron is going to lose focus on where the World Championship is coming from.
Well, in fact, the statement for Claren says exactly that. Not concerned about the possibility of friction developing between the two drivers. Ron Dennis said, competition is the cars in front of us. We don't worry about each other. We just concentrate on beating anyone that sits in front of us on the grid or on the race circuit. There you go.
End
of story. It's a non-story,
right.
Team. Sorry. Carry on.
Okay. Sunday Mirror on Sunday had a lovely piece about Jackie Stewart, who's saying
isn't
that...
Isn't it a disgrace that there's not a corner named after Jackie Stewart on any British racing track?
It is a disgrace. I didn't know that, actually. Not even Knock Hill.
No.
No, they're all named after
sponsors.
Things like Real Claire, Radio, yes. And John R. Weir.
Oh, yeah.
And local funeral.
No, Ian Duffus.
Terrible commercialisation of the sport, honestly.
You cannot believe that there is three times a champion, Formula One world champion, and Jackie Stewart doesn't get a corner named
well,
after
more
him. It's a disgrace.
I think this is all, but one point of that, there are several people walking around today who wouldn't be walking around today if Jackie hadn't gone against the grain of the time and started pushing safety.
No, absolutely. For everything that he's achieved and done in his years of service to the sport, this came up actually. I was just noticing that Anglesey are going to name a corner on their new circuit after John Peel, the radio ex Radio 1 DJ, not with us anymore, ex person in fact, who passed away last year. And lovely though that is, because John Peel is a big broadcasting hero of mine and apparently spent his national service at Anglesey. Then and was into cars a bit as well. It still just brought into sharp focus the fact that there's not a Jackie Stewart corner anywhere. There's not a Stewart Straight or a Stewart S's or a JYS complex or whatever, and there should be, and I think we should start doing it now.
Perhaps there should be one overseas, because Jackie's obviously very keen for Lewis to move overseas because he thinks that he shouldn't be living in Britain anymore.
Is that the story, is it?
The story is that he should go to Switzerland or Monaco, where people like Michael Schumacher and Jenson Button live.
Okay, well that's...
That way, the sports...
Was this in the sports page or the estate agent page of the Sunday Mirror?
This is in the sports pages of the Sunday Mirror. That way, he will have a sunnier climate for his year-round fitness training.
What, Switzerland? It's bloody cold in Switzerland all the time, you know.
Well, Jackie, don't forget, Jackie was one of the first guys to do that. He moved out to Switzerland, moved out to
Geneva, and he moved back to form Stewart Grand Prix, and Phil Collins rented his house.
Ah,
yes.
There you go.
Phil Collins actually...
no, don't. Let's not go off down that, please.
Lives in Sussex, quite near to Bob Consongeros.
Lovely.
Carry on.
Okay, carry on. Jackie Stewart corner, please. Stewart Straight, Stewart S's, something, please. Somebody listen. Can we start a protest now? We managed to get one for Andy Green.
Yeah.
So we should have one for Jackie Stewart.
Well, I think it should be at Knock Hill, and I think it should be sponsored by someone, so it could be the
Royal Bank of Scotland, Stewart S's.
Something like that, yes. they're the sort of people who would put up some money for that. Tomorrow, it is a happy birthday to Flavio Briatore.
He's 107.
Almost.
There is a picture of him somewhere.
Just half a century short of that.
How old is he? 57?
He's 57 tomorrow.
What, really?
Really.
Nah, he's not. He's older than that.
He's older than that.
According to Renault.
He's a good 10 years older than that, isn't he?
He wasn't. I mean, I know he's been doing it for, 15 years, and he wasn't young when he turned up.
How old's Alex Briatore, his son? He's in his 40s, isn't he?
That's still possible.
Hey-ho.
However old Flavio is, Elisabetta Gregoracci is definitely only 27.
Is that his latest squeeze?
She's the swimsuit model who is late.
Do you know what it is? I've worked out what Flavio's doing. Flavio, he's obviously wanted to become a new Hugh Hefner. And as he gets older and leatherier, his girlfriends get younger and more subtle. And eventually they have seven of them and live in a big mansion in this billionaire club.
She decided to help out the Italian daily newspaper Gazzetta dello Sport, who obviously have to print pages about Formula One every day, by writing an open love letter, which they published.
Oh dear.
And did they also include a stick bag, did they, as well?
It is hard to know what gift to give
no,
you.
No, stop, please.
No,
please.
No.
Everything
news.
I think
not
of,
news.
You have it already.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's very
what
rich.
What first attracted you to the billionaire, Flavio Briatore, love? Right, next. Please, next.
New innovation for Formula One at Malaysia.
Go on.
Oh, we've got new music.
Have any ideas what this is, Nick?
No, is it trance music? I don't know.
What's the name of the band? It's very clever, this, Tim, very clever. Do you know what the name of the band is, Nick?
No, I'm behind you, bro.
The White Stripes.
Oh, right.
Very well done, Mr. Grey.
Oh, dear.
Did you know, didn't work in the race because they
front,
all got
no.
worn off.
No, they always work at the front. They didn't run off the front. You always tell on the front. They just managed to wear them out the rear.
Martin Brundle got himself very confused, as did James Allen, several times, in fact, in James' case. But they couldn't decide whether people had gone out on mixed sets or not. And in fact, you're not allowed to do that, are you? You've got to have full match tires.
No, I mean, basically, the worked a lot better than the dots, and they seem to work fine. Just as with the high abrasion at the rear end of Malaysia, they just managed to wear out the bottom of the grill. It was always very obvious because the white stripes at the front were the same. I thought, it was one of the very few things that worked quite well, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't see them from the side very well, but...
But most, if you look at the way they film cars, they always lay out the long pull shots forward, and that's when they're popular. Did you see the very arty thing they did at the start?
Possibly.
As they came to line up, they did a very slow fade to blur as they went away from the camera, and they pulled it into focus as they came in again. Obviously, someone spent hours rehearsing that down at FOM.
Do you know that they actually physically paint the white stripes on the tyres?
You have to, because of course they'd already moulded them all for the first three races. And so when they changed their ideas at the end of the Melbourne Grand Prix, they had to then had to be hand done. Yeah,
the white stripes playing in the background there is applied with a special white marker pen while the tyre is spinning on a balancing unit.
Yeah, I've seen those white marker pens. You can buy them in Halford.
It apparently took them 10 hours to do all the tyres.
No, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, even you know, there's a lot of sets for a weekend with 70 entire field.
The advantage is with this, though, as they were saying before, because we were talking about, remember at the start of the season, doing red sidewalls like they're doing in Champ Car, of which I'm sure more later. But the soft compound for some races might end up being the harder compound for others, so they didn't want to have to make a whole
mold
set of tyres.
Whichever it may be, will always be the one with the white line.
Yes, but that might not always be the same
exactly,
compound.
Exactly, they mix and match, you're quite right.
Correct.
Four compounds a season.
So it's easy to just stick it, have some experience.
I think it works very well, but in a way, I think it works a lot better than the red sidewalls, because of the way they film Formula 1 cars, it's much more obvious.
Yeah, and certainly from the onboard, you could say the front ones quite well. Okay, so that was a hit then. Next, Tim.
Bernie Eccleston.
Bernard Charles.
Showing his, going to increase his popularity among the teams again, or not, by changing the way that prize money is allocated to
teams. But we don't know how prize money is allocated. No one knows how prize money is allocated because they won't tell us it's in the Concorde Agreement.
We do know that it's only given to the first or the top 10 teams in the points at the end of the season. And he's going to change it so that all 12 teams get prize money.
Is that because he's trying to head off at the past customer chassis argument?
Exactly, yes.
I hadn't even heard this story in advance. It's pretty obvious.
Yes. Obviously, by giving money to all the teams, including the ones who are going to finish last, like Spyker, and who don't have a big manufacturer backing them, that means that they're guaranteed at least some money to carry on next year.
That's super, isn't it? Well, obviously, we're all going to be friends. And
isn't there going to be a big meeting in Bahrain to try and get this chassis thing sorted out?
I haven't heard that. I mean, I think there is a team meeting.
There is a meeting in Bahrain. Whether or not this is discussed is not known.
Bernie, in an interview, has said he's expressed his frustration at the indifference of some teams over the affair, and he's made it clear that this is an issue for all 11 teams on the grid and not just Super Aguri, Toro Rosso and their partner outfits.
I think it's an issue that's been blown out of all proportion. They publish what the rules were for next year rather than constantly changing the whole time. Everyone would forget about it. The point is that they still haven't actually said, despite the original plan being that way from the FIA, Max Mosley, have not actually said that it'll be allowed next year. We all go blithely assuming it will be, but actually there's nothing written in stone to say that rule will be changed next year.
Apparently, Bernie has said the outfits running customer cars wouldn't score points for themselves, but for their main factory partners. And so Super Aguri would score points for Honda, Scuderia, Toro Rosso, would score points for Red Bull, and then the main teams would then be mandated to share their revenues from television rights with the customer car teams.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
So that's how it's going to work. Quite interesting, that, isn't
interesting,
it?
Yeah.
Two more stories which are...
I'm running very short time, boys, I'm afraid.
Very loosely connected, so we'll just nip through these quickly. And first of all, a GP2 story. ART is proud to announce the arrival of a new prestigious shareholder in their company, the Crown Prince of the Bahrain Kingdom, Sheikh Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa.
So therefore he's now got enough money to go to F1.
Hang on a second, that name rings a bell.
Here's the Crown Prince of Bahrain.
Yeah, that means he owns the circuit of Bahrain, doesn't he?
He also now owns 30% of ART, with Frederick Vasseur and Nicholas Tote owning 35% each. Tote said, "We're very proud to welcome the Prince into our company. The new era will enable us to face the future with increased development prospects and look ahead into the long term." Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the long term, everyone is suggesting, is that at the end of this season, ART will buy Scuderia Toro Rosso to get themselves a F1 entry. And they'll also run in Formula 1 with two drivers, Tenio Liuzzi, who's got lots of Red Bull money behind him, and Sebastian Bourdais, who is managed by Nicholas Tote.
Oh, this is all working out very well, isn't it?
Isn't this working out in a beautiful way?
So perfectly, as long as someone sat down and plotted it out on a piece of paper.
Yes.
And then made the facts fit it.
I don't do that, so I'm a proper journalist.
No, I'm saying the person, I didn't know STR was actually for sale, but there we go.
Well, apparently it's not, because insiders at Scuderia Toro Rosso have said, or have poked fun at rumours that they're going to be sold at the end of this season. So... we've told you what's going to happen. We've told you that they're denying it. Just believe us and everything will be okay. Finally, for Nick...
And can I just mention that probably in 3 or 4 weeks' time, you'll see that in the Specialist Press and listen to it on other people's podcasts.
I think that's likely.
Onto two wheels. At the start of the year, we all predicted this this season's British Superbike Championship would be won by Leon Haslam. Completely different Leon, who... stole the show at Brands Hatch at the weekend.
Now, I hadn't been channel hopping at midnight yesterday. I wouldn't see any of this. So all I know is Lavinia won twice, and another guy called Leon BBC got two podiums. And that is the limit of my knowledge of it, because I literally didn't catch it, because I was out all day yesterday.
Well, you see, unfortunately, at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, you don't go to ITV4 when you're looking for motorsport.
It's on Monday.
On a bank holiday Monday, you just don't do it. You know, you wait for the Sunderland Southampton game to come on. Sorry, Tim, sorry to have slipped that in. So that's why nobody watched it. But I saw a bit of it on Sky. It looked quite a good race.
It's a good track for bikes, the Grand Prix circuit, Brand.
It is very good, particularly now that they've made Dingle Dell into a proper corner again. Mm. Very good indeed. Is that it for Tim?
That is it for Nick, but we're talking about this Leon Camier person a little later on.
Fantastic. See you guys.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio. Midweek Motorsport with John Hindhoff.
Globecast Radio.
Well, this weekend sees the start of the Le Mans Series, the European Sports Car Championship, effectively. Delighted to say that joining us on the phone, and I'm sure looking forward to getting back behind the wheel of a prototype racing car, is Tommy Erdos. Welcome back to the show, Tommy.
Thank you, John. Nice to speak to you.
It's been a long old winter, of course. You haven't been sitting around doing nothing. There's been some testing going on, but you must be excited at the prospect of getting the race season properly underway this weekend.
Absolutely, it's great, and it's great to be talking to you. It kind of has a feel, a Le Mans feel to it, talking to you again, and it means that we're back on track. So it's great. Now I can't wait to, for the season to start.
Now, of course, you're with the RML team again for 2007 in the Le Mans series. You haven't had the best of luck in the last couple of years, Tommy, have you?
You could say that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's. It seems to be the last race of the season that sort of has these surprises for us, and we have been unlucky, I guess. You know, but we're here again. That's the main thing. We're gonna go for it again and do our best to try and get the LMS title. And obviously, we're now going back to Le Mans, having won the LMP2 class in 2005 and 2006. Who knows? Maybe we can get the hat trick done.
That would be some achievement, mate. Well, I know you and I have talked about this before. Before that, a couple of races. Monza this weekend, then we go to Valencia, and then the rest of the season is Nürburgring, Spa, Silverstone, and then the Mil Miejas in Brazil in November, which is a fantastic event, which you must be looking forward to immensely.
Very much so, yes. Yes,
how long is it since you raced in Brazil, Tommy?
Actually, I have never raced in Brazil. this will be my very first race in my home country, which is very unusual. And obviously, most Brazilian drivers would have a starting of a career in Brazil, but not me. I started racing in the UK and been racing in the UK ever since, and obviously in America and Europe. But never ever even driven on any track in Brazil, so I really don't know Interlagos. I know Interlagos from the television. That's about it.
So your home race and you don't know the track. That's very funny.
Let's
come back up the date a little bit. End of last month, down at the official test at Paul Ricard. How did that go with the RML team?
Yes, it went very well. We had a very, very clean run. The car ran reliably throughout the test days, and we ran specifically with low downforce, obviously having Le Mans in mind, and also Monza. I mean, we want to try and really maximize the mechanical grip of the car, so we didn't want to put any downforce at all on the car. And we know that Paul Ricard actually likes a little bit of downforce, but on purpose, we did not follow that route because we didn't want to set the car up for Ricard, and which meant that perhaps we weren't quite as competitive on lap times as we would have been had we introduced more downforce. But it was just really a test day for us to again maximize the setup for Le Mans. As well as with an eye on Monza as well.
Now Monza was off the calendar last year, so we're back at Monza this year. Great track, lots of history, very fast track. Have you guys got the updated bodywork for the car, Tommy? The new 07 bodywork. Are you running that?
No, we're not. We've decided to wait on that. And as you know these cars to run in the Le Mans series, they're very expensive. And we decided that there isn't enough of a need for the 07 pack. Certainly for the first race of the season, Monza is a very fast track. We think that we can get a setup on the car with the 06 aero kit. Now, having said that, we've seen some of our competitors using the 07 Lola kit, and that's beginning to show some good speed. So, we know the car very well. I mean, the RML obviously always, they always do a fantastic job preparing the car. So we have reliability on our side, and those are the things that we're going to be concentrating on, and rather than trying to get outright speed. So I think we're in for probably a different season in that we're probably not going to be featuring at the top end of the sheets in qualifying and so on so much perhaps, but we will be looking at our race setup and again hopefully our reliability will be on our side.
You get 3 hours of free practice, 40 minutes of qualifying, which never seems very much, a little 20-minute more warm-up before what effectively is probably going to be somewhere in the region of 5 to 5.5 hours of racing. That's an awful lot of track time, that. I mean, how much work do you get through in that free practice time in those 3 one-hour sessions?
Well, it is actually very good in that it gives us enough opportunity to obviously revisit the track, both Mike and myself to relearn it, if you will. I mean, obviously we have been there before, but as you said, we weren't there last year. So, you know, we'll be looking at our data from 2005 and some video footage, and then obviously the practice times that we get on track will be enough for us to, you know, to relearn Monza and also to start improving the package as well. I mean, although we've been there with the same car, we haven't been to Monza with the AER engine. When we were there last time, our car was fitted with a Judd.
Yes.
So there will be slight different characteristics from the engine point of view, and so as always, we'll be trying to optimise the package, you know, during those free practice times.
Looking down the P2 entry list, it really is almost a who's who of international racing, certainly European racing. Yourselves, obviously, you and Mike Newton. Have we got a third driver for the car? Is it just going to be you and Mike who do the bulk of the work this year?
No, it'll be just Mike and myself for the Le Mans series, but we will have Andy Wallace again with us for Le Mans. So for the Le Mans series, only Mike and myself. But we're, you know, delighted to say that Andy is joining us again. He's a fantastic guy and did a great job for us, obviously, the last year.
Just looking through here, you've got the Brucladi Radical, the Noel Del Bello Racing, Horag, Bini Motorsports, Bharati Epsilon, Solnier Racing, Cruise Motorsport, Embassy. Those are just the ones where I'm picking out people that I know, and there's another three or four teams on top of that. So P2, quite a reasonable size entry, and it's going to be another hard-fought season, Tommy.
Absolutely. I mean, the competition is getting stronger and stronger. It's a very different year this year, I think, as you pointed out. So many good entries, you know, good teams, drivers, cars, and we really need to up our game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's going to be a very tough season, and but, you know, it's a challenge that we're really looking forward to.
And not all Lolas this year. You have the MG Lola, the RML Lola, if you like, the development of the X264. A lot of the 05 40 Lolas with the new kit on it. There's a Pill Beam in there, there's a Courage, there's a couple of Radicals, and a Pescarolo, and a Zytec. So, I mean, plenty of variety there as well, mate.
Absolutely. I mean, the class is looking very healthy, and know that the both the Radicals, well, all Radicals and the Zytec will be especially fast on a one lap, you know, in qualifying and throughout the race. I mean, once they get their cars reliable, and they will be very tough to follow. And of course, there's the Pescarolo LMP2 that we still haven't seen.
Yeah.
That's going to be at Monza. So it's the class is looking very strong, and but also LMP1. If you look at the LMP1 entry, that's not looking too bad either.
When obviously not shoddy at all, is it?
Two Peugeot factories and some other cars there. So it's a very healthy grid. It's should be a very nice championship.
I think something like 19 prototypes all told, plenty of competition there. Do you bother yourself too much with the P1 cars, or do you just sort of run your own race, Tommy?
Well, to be honest, we're running our own race in the LMP2. I think, and more so this year, that the regulations have changed, where they've now... the organizers decided to slow down all the classes below LMP1. That means that we now run with a 5% reduction in restrictors compared to last year. So obviously they're trying to increase the gap between LMP1s and LMP2s. And I've been told also that the other classes, the GT1 and GT2, has also received a reduction in restrictors, again, to slow all the classes down. So I think it's less realistic for us to expect to actually mix in with the LMP1s this year.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be much tougher. I think there will be bigger differences in lap times. And also there's a healthier entry in LMP1. So I think, you know, what we saw last year with sometimes we were qualifying on the second row of the grid even,
yes,
and third row of the grid overall, I think that's going to be highly unlikely this year.
Now, clearly, as you say, the LMS season works up towards Le Mans and then the rest of the season after it. But there is some unfinished business for you guys, as we mentioned, with the LMS season. Although I'm sure I know how you and, in fact, Mike would answer this question. Which is more important then, the whole season in LMS or going to Le Mans in June?
You know, although we've had two very unlucky ends of seasons in LMS, and obviously there is this sort of frustration that, you know, surely we must do it this time around, and obviously there is a very strong desire for us to succeed in LMS, I still, every time you put that question to me, it's just such an easy one to answer, and it's unbelievable, because it just shows you know, the importance of the event at Le Mans is. I mean, is winning Le Mans is for sure the you know the most important thing in our minds. It always will be, and it doesn't matter if you win once, twice, three times, four times. I mean, look at Christensen. You know, watching him on the podium when he won his sixth or seventh time or whatever, it was just as elated as it probably was in the first time around. It's just the importance of that meeting is just so huge in what we do. You know, we're in sports car racing, and that is the pinnacle of what we do. So, yes, Le Mans is obviously the hat trick. It would be absolutely a dream come true.
Now, away from the prototypes, you're getting yourself back into a GT car as well this year, aren't you, Tommy? This is a bit of excitement. You haven't driven with the roof on for a little while, have you?
Well, that's right. Yeah, it's going to get a little bit hot in there, but I'm really looking forward to that challenge as well. It's something that was put together relatively late, only a few weeks ago, and this was confirmed. And I'm driving for Damax in the British GT, driving one of their Ascaris with Stephen Keating, and it really is. A lot of the credit for that is to Stephen, who put the deal together with Damax and brought me along to drive with them. And I've only had one race only this last weekend at Alton Park. Didn't go very well. We had a few incidents, a few problems, but the car is fantastic. The team is great to work with, and I can see some success with that as well this year.
The Ascari is a tremendous piece of kit, and the British GT Championship this year looking probably, Tommy, healthier than it has done for many years. Slight change in the regulations and a lot more entries.
That's right, yes. There are a lot of good quality entries again, and brand new GT3 cars, and of course GT3 now is the top category in the championship, and it's just a very healthy scene, you know, in generally speaking. At Alton Park we had, something like 30-odd cars there.
Mm.
So that shows, the strength of the series, and some good drivers as well, and very good drivers. So it's going to be, it's definitely not going to be a walk in the park. We're going to have to work hard for it.
Is a championship challenge on the cards for later on in the year? You two rounds, as you say, gone. There's another six events, another 12 races to go across the championship season. Do you think you can get this car running? And clearly, you can't afford to keep not scoring, so you've got to get it running quickly.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we need to really now start scoring quite high as well from the next race onwards at Donington Park. And I still think we can mount the challenge. We certainly have a very competitive package in the Ascari car. The team that run the car, Damax, they probably have the most experience with these types of cars. And both Robin Ward and Steve Ridges, they're very capable engineers, and I'm very impressed with their team. And we certainly will have the tool to do well. But we'll see what the season will bring. It'll be a very tough competition.
Must be quite difficult for you, Tommy, because although these are quite long races in national racing, being the bulk of them are a 1 hour race, although I think there's going to be a couple of 2 hour races as well. Two drivers for each race means you get about 25 minutes, half an hour in the car. You'd think nothing of jumping in the prototype and doing an hour or 2 hours at a time. So it's a bit of a different mindset for you here.
It sure is. It feels like a sprint race, really, and this GT race, and it is. I mean, as you say, I'm in the car for a maximum of 30 minutes or so in the British GT races. So, obviously, as you say, there are two-hour races. I will miss one of them. Unfortunately, it clashes with the Le Mans test day. That's the Snetterton round on June the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be doing the other two-hour race at Silverstone with Stephen. It's different from what we do in the Le Mans series, but at the end of the day, it's a car with a steering wheel and four wheels, it doesn't take long to adjust to that.
Now, one 24-hour race would be enough for most people throughout the season at Le Mans, but last year you and Mike decided to take on another one at the Silverstone at the Brit car. Plans for that this year as well, Tommy?
I think that's on the cards. I think Mike is trying to get the Falcon.
what a beast.
it is a beast, yeah. He's obviously, he wants to do it again. He enjoyed the meeting last year. I really loved it. I think it's a great atmosphere and a great event. And right now the Falcon is actually going through a little bit of you know, TLC. You know, we need to improve a few systems in the car. But you know, generally, the car was very reliable in the last event. So, but you know, it's a bit. Oh, it's a 19. I think it's a 1995 chassis. So it's almost bordering on historic. At the, you know, it's what 10, 12 years old. So, but you know, we do it for a bit of fun, and it's a relaxed atmosphere, and it's you know, we do enjoy it. It's good.
You got to let me know when you're getting that beast out, because I'd love to come and have a run in it.
Oh, you should have a run. You'd love it. It's absolutely brilliant to drive. Really easy to drive, loads of power, and it's great. Yeah, we should have you there when we first run the car.
All right, that's a date. Tommy, listen, we've took up far too much of your time. Thank you very much for joining us here on Midweek Motorsport. Good luck for not only this weekend at Monza, but for the rest of the season. Pass on all of our best, as ever, to the guys at RML.
I sure will. Thank you very much, and it's always a pleasure talking to you, mate.
Every week, we bring you all the motorsport news, wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport.
The international motorsport magazine on radio.
Low Cost Radio.
Well, the British Superbike Championship got off to a lovely sunny start at Brands Hatch at the weekend, and earlier in the year we all tipped Leon Haslam to be champion in British Superbikes this season, but it was a different Leon that was setting the pace at Brands at the weekend, wasn't it, Larry Carter?
Absolutely. Well, we did go on record as saying that we thought that Leon Haslam, it would be, that was one of the main protagonists for the championship, and old Scoop Carter ventured his 50 pence on the Pocket Rocket and the Airwaves Ducati with him being runner-up last year, and one thing we've never been very good at is in the betting stakes, and sadly for Leon Haslam and the Airwaves Ducati team at the weekend, then it didn't quite work out. There was a number of tyre issues for the Airways Ducati squad, and indeed all the Dunlop runners this weekend, with the very, very high temperatures and unseasonably at this time of year, and as a result one or two of the riders did tend to struggle. But the Leon that you refer to, of course, was Leon Camier, the former British Supersport champion who runs for the BikeAnimal.com Honda squad. Now that is effectively a satellite offshoot of the Works HRC team, the Honda Racing Corporation team that runs Yuichi Kinari and Jonathan Rea. And Leon gave a very, very good account of himself. On his Superbike debut, not only did he finish second in the first race, he actually followed that up with another podium in the second race of the day in the Bennetts British Superbike Championship to leave Brands Hatch in joint second place of the championship, just 14 points behind the double winner there, Gregorio Labia from Spain on the Airways Ducati, who took the double victory. So indeed, an impressive performance for young Camier on his debut in the move up from the Supersport Championship.
And doing a lot better than both Kinari and Jonathan Rea.
Yeah, Yuichi Kinari, the defending champion, the 23-year-old Japanese rider, he had all sorts of problems throughout the course of the weekend, and with Kia Racing in the UK now for something like 4 years, we see this as a little bit of a trait of his. He's very, very slow coming out of the blocks. For whatever reason, it always takes him a round or two to get up to speed on that factory Honda Fireblade with the Michelin tyres on. And for whatever reason, we talked to Kia over the course of the weekend, and he always his English isn't perfect, but we tend to get a little bit of information from him. And I spoke to him at a charity chat show that we did for the CJ Fund on the Sunday night at the Brands Hatch Thistle. And I said, Kia, what was the problem? And he said, bike good, rider not good. And the reason, and draw your own conclusions from that. He was up there. He finished way down the order in the first race. He finished only eighth in the first race, some 21 and a half seconds off of the leader. And obviously some radical improvements were needed by the HM Plant Honda squad, which they managed to do. And as a result, Kia was running up there in the leading bunch in race two in front of a record 42,000 fans at Brands Hatch, a massive, massive crowd at Brands Hatch. But for whatever reason, we looked to the Paddock Hill Bend sector, and we saw that Kia, he raised his arm and it looked as though the Honda had cried enough, and he raced his way backwards, way down the order, and then the bike chimed in again for whatever reason. It seemed as though he perhaps had an electrical problem, but poor old Keogh, by then he'd lost any chance of doing well, and he finished way down the order in race two. So a lot to do for Yuichi Kinari, who lies only ninth in the championship standing, some 37 points behind the championship leader Gregorio Labia. But lots of work to do for Camier, but not so his teammate Jonathan Rea, the young 20-year-old Ulsterman, runs out of Ballyclare in Northern Ireland. It was his debut on the factory Honda Fireblade, and he managed to box off another double podium, meaning four podiums out of six for Honda on the rostrum at Brands Hatch, and he too lies alongside Leon Camier, second in the championship standings, going into next weekend's action at rounds three and four at Thruxton.
A winner, of course, of both races, Gregory Oliveira, the 2005 champion. Surprised by that, or not really?
Absolutely not, absolutely not. We know what a class act Gregory Oliveira is on that Airwave Ducati. He had unfinished business from Brands Hatch last year. Remember that he was the 2005 champion, as you mentioned. He led the championship going into the 2006 final round at Brands Hatch last year, whereby he had an accident on the first race. It wasn't his fault. He had a coming together with another rider, and as a result, it clipped his brake lever and knocked that off. As a result, he arrived at the 160-mile-an-hour Hawthorne corner without any stopping power, and he had to lay it down into the gravel, perfectly uninjured from that. But then a problem with the machine in race two meant that he left Brands Hatch with no points, and as a result, he was third in the championship. But one thing we know about Oliveira is that he gets out of the blocks, unlike Chinari, very, very quickly. And last year he did the double on four occasions, I think it was, in the early part of this season. And this year he started off exactly where you would expect him. He did the double at Thruxton last year as well, so it's a little bit ominous for his rivals. But that Ducati is working. It's the FO6 model with one or two improvements to make it the FO7. They've not brought a new factory bike out, given that Ducati are wanting to develop the new 1098 road bike. So as a result, this bike is a one-year vintage, effectively. But Oliveira, he knows the British tracks. It was certainly Spanish weather yesterday at Brands, and I reckon that this weekend he's going to increase that championship lead even further. Whether or not Haslam can respond, that's a big question. He had an absolute nightmare, but Leon Haslam, for the first time in his British Superbike career, actually finished both races at the opening round of the championship, which is something he's never done before, so I guess Leon will take that.
So there are some positives out of the weekend for him.
Yeah, he had all sorts of problems. The bike wasn't quite performing exactly as he liked. They have the traction control system on a lot of these bikes. As far as the Hondas are concerned, they have an intelligent throttle system which with an anti-spin device, but effectively it means that you can whack the throttle wide open and the bike just decides to accelerate as and when it so decides. And as a result, that has a big effect on the tyres, and with it being a little bit warmer, and there is a strict limit to the amount of tyres that the teams can actually choose to take to race meetings this year, and as a result all those factors just combine to perhaps hinder one or two of the riders, but that won't be the case at Thruxton next weekend. But Oliveira, he will take some beating. Jonathan Ray, Leon Camier, both on the podium as well, and the likes of Haslam, Chiannari, Shaky Byrne, Chris Walker, of course, making his comeback in the Bennett's British Superbike Championship for the Rizzo Suzuki squad. He too had a weekend full of problems, only a 5th and an 8th place finish for the Stalker. Shaky Byrne, he was up there, finished 4th in the opening race, and was dicing with Haslam for a podium position in race two when he got edged out on the 150-mile-an-hour Hawthorne corner, and he ended up in the gravel. Luckily stayed aboard to get that bike back to the finish, the Stobart Pentaxi Motorsport bike, back to 13th at the finish. So lots of drama and lots of intrigue yesterday, and what it has meant is that Oliveira's got that foothold in the championship, but the chasing pack of Camier and Ray there in second place, Haslam there runs fourth, Tom Sykes, another debutant from the Supersport category, Chris Walker in sixth, Shaky Byrne seventh, The Blade Michael Rutter eighth, Yuichi Chiannari in ninth, and the first Yamaha in the Bennett's British Superbike Championship, Simon Andrews there in 10th place, but certainly a very, very exciting weekend.
You mentioned Chris Walker there. Were you disappointed, after all the hype surrounding his return, that he didn't do better over the Brands weekend?
I think Chris will be very disappointed with his results. When we did the charity chat show, as I mentioned, on the Sunday night, then he did say that it's going to take him at least three rounds to get that Rizzo Suzuki up to speed. It is the new K7 version. They have tested extensively with it, but it is effectively an all-new team. There's one or two new technicians coming to that team. All the previous incumbents as far as riders has been shipped out, and Chris and Cal Crutchlow have come into it. There's a new team manager with Simon Buckmaster this year, a new number of technicians as well, so it's a little bit of a metamorphosis as far as the Rizzo Suzuki squad's concerned. And Chris, yeah, he's a class act, is Chris, and over the years he's finished four times a runner-up in the British Superbike Championship, and the idea of him coming back to race in the UK is for him to win the championship that everybody so wants him to. Okay, he's given a few of his rivals a little bit of a head start, but at the end of the day, this we're talking after two races in what is effectively a 26th race championship. There's lots of twists and lots of turns. Oliveira will not win every race, that is for sure. At some point in time, perhaps his bike will perhaps falter, or we saw Greg just tip off a couple of times last year. The youth of Leon Cameo, Jonathan Rea. You know, will that transpose itself as the rounds go on? There was, Leon was running a little bit close to the wind yesterday. One or two moves that were raised a few eyebrows. The likes of Tom Sykes coming back, Shaky Byrne, you can't rule him out. Kian Ari, we know for a fact, will come strong as the season progresses. And all I can say is that one thing is for sure, that there will be a lot of turns and twists in this championship yet.
Well, we saw the same thing last year with Lavia taking quite a big lead at the start of the season, and then it gradually being chipped away as the year went on. Thruxton next, obviously a very different circuit in terms of tyres. Are we going to see a lot of changes in who's dominant there?
I think what you'll see is probably a repeat of last year. You're quite right, Gregorio Labia did lead the championship at the halfway stage by some 62 points, and everybody was, it was just a foregone conclusion that the El Corre Caminos, the Spanish roadrunner, as he's known around the circuits, was going to just run away with the championship, and everybody was just expecting that. All bets were off, effectively. But then, bit by bit, the Airways Ducati suffered. There was one or two problems, an electrical problem up at Knock Hill, and then Greg tipped off once or twice. There was a problem with a slip of clutch that dumped him on the ground as well. But next week, at Thruxton, it's a little bit of an unknown quantity, because it's not one of these circuits that lots of people race at. The only time that the Bennett's British Superbike Championship goes there, of course, is once a year. For the last time, the likes of Greg Labia, Jonathan Rea, Leon Cameo, Leon Haslam, Tom Sykes, Carl Harris et al., Michael Rutter will have raced there, was 12 months ago. They've not been there since. So as a result, then, what they need to do on the Friday is get the bikes up to speed, get them working well, and it will be a little bit of a tyre lottery, bearing in mind that the Michelins of the factory Hondas of Jonathan Rea and Yuichi Kinari will be up against the factory Dunlops, effectively, with most of the field. And let's not forget that the Virgin Media Optima Loans Yamaha squad of Tommy Hill and James Hayden, as well as the team naturally best of the local riders down at Thruxton, Ollie and Tommy Bridewell, are running the Pirelli tyres as well. So we've seen that the Pirellis, in the hands of James Ellison a number of years ago, go very, very well around there. So it all depends what the weather's going to do. We know that it's it can be a little bit cool around Thruxton, the old ex-airfield circuit. Unlike Brands Hatch in a natural amphitheatre, then the temperature's always a little bit cooler, and especially in April, whereby it can perhaps get a little even cooler still. So it's going to be tough, but I think that the Ducatis have got a good setting around there.
Larry, do we see the same in the bikes as we do in four-wheeled motorsport around Thruxton? It's the fastest circuit that we go to in four-wheeled motorsport. I would think that'll be probably about the same on two wheels. But it's also a circuit that some drivers, in fact most drivers, either love or hate. There's nobody who kind of says, oh well, Thruxton's just all right. Is that the same amongst the two-wheel guys?
Yeah, absolutely, John. It is the fastest circuit that we go to as far as the Bennett's British Superbike Championship concerned. And you've talked to a lot of riders, indeed a lot of drivers, about their favourite corners on the UK motorsport scene. And a lot will refer to perhaps Paddock Hill Bend at Brands Hatch, but I think there would be a fair old percentage that mention a certain right-hander at Church Corner, the back part of the circuit, on the run-through village, heading out before the run-up towards Woodham Hill, whereby the bikes are getting on for in excess with a favourable wind of probably around about 195 miles per hour. The braking into the club chicane, and it's a big, big slipstreaming manoeuvre up that particular part of the track. But Church Corner, that fast right-hander. The bikes, I've had the fortune of doing a number of flying laps for the various race programmes that we correspond to a number of the riders, and each and every one of them makes point of that on the entry into the corner. Then there's a few ripples, a few bumps that unsettles a bike.
I was going to say, it's not the flattest of surfaces there,
no,
is it?
And with cars, perhaps, there's more one line through there. With bikes, whereby there's three or four jostling for position through there, it's wherever you end up on the track. And one or two of the boys have been down there. Ollie Bridewell, who I know quite well, he had a crash in the data logging showing that he actually hit the ground at something like 156 miles per hour on that, and he slid for just short of 300 yards. Now, you know, that is a fair old crash at that sort of speed, and like I liken it to, imagine doing the legal speed limit on the M1, imagine doubling it, imagine adding a little bit more, and then opening the car door and throwing yourself out. That's the only sort of analogy I can really draw on that one, John.
But let's not do that at home, people.
Absolutely. Not recommending that you do that, of course. It's one of these circuits whereby it's vital that you get a good setup. It is very, very bumpy around Thruxton, and it's very, very fast, and a good handling bike is essential around there. But I think if you were to talk to a lot of the riders, then Thruxton is one of their favourite circuits, because the reason these guys are motorcycle racers is because they love going fast on motorbikes.
Yes.
And Thruxton, it lends itself to going so fast around there with at such a high average speed. And what's more, it's very, very wide, which lends itself to good racing as well. It's not one of these stop-start circuits where we've got a couple of hairpins, a couple of chicanes, perhaps like your Knock Hills, perhaps like your Donington Park, and places like that. It's just absolutely flat to the stop all the way around, and it usually results in six or seven bikes coming into the final chicane on the last lap. You can be first in, you can be seventh out of it.
It's great to see the British Superbike Championship doing so well again, Larry, because three or four years ago we were a little bit worried about the championship, but all of a sudden it's exploded again, and you've mentioned some of the names that have come back into the championship, but it's really important, isn't it, to have a strong British Championship.
I think you're absolutely right, John, and we're very fortunate. If I just wear my MCRCB events hat, MCRCB events are the promoters, the organisers of the Venice British Superbike Championship. At the helm is a very, very crude young man, astute, I would say. He can be a little bit crude at times, but he's very, very astute. It's Stuart Higgs, who's the MCRCB race and events director, and if we draw car analogies, I guess Alan Gow is the equivalent in Formula 3, perhaps Stefan Rossel in F3 and GT, but Stuart, he's very, very shrewd. He's forward-thinking, he's only a young guy in his early 30s, he belies his experience. He started off marshalling, actually. His dad used to take him along and marshal at Brands Hatch in the early days. Fred Clark, my co-commentator at the British Superbike Championship, remember Stuart as a young 8 or 9 year old boy actually going along and doing that. Now he's expanded into this role that he's got. And he's forward-thinking as well, and what he does is he tries to second-guess everything. He's always in liaison with the teams, the tyre manufacturers, the TV and media partners. Dorna have come on board in the recent years, who also are involved in the MotoGP Championship as commercial partners, and they're doing their bit for the championship. But what he does is he's innovative, and it was him that introduced the safety cars, for argument's sake, a few years ago, whereby MotoGP and World Superbikes have yet to adopt that. And we try to sometimes shirt tail onto the back of MotoGP, because with the single qualifying session and everything else, the key to BSB, John, is it just has to keep reinventing itself and keep coming up with innovative ideas. And the numbers at the racetracks, we had 45,000 at Brands Hatch at the end of last year. Jonathan Palmer was absolutely blown away, the circuit owner of the Motorsport Vision Circuit. So 42,000 people there yesterday for the Bank Holiday Easter Monday meeting. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Live ITV coverage and Sky Sports coverage. And I think that the whole package, there's household names in there, with the likes of Rizzo, Suzuki, Virgin Media, Yamaha, we've got Eddie Stobart. They don't come much more high street name than that. You just drive 200 yards down a motorway, you see an Eddie Stobart truck. You've got Airwaves, a brand of the Wrigley's chewing gum. You've got computer people with such as Isilon, Samsung, other mobile phone people. Relentless, the energy drink by Coca-Cola, VK, Ventaxi. There's all these high street names that people can relate to. And nowadays, I just think that the product, and I'm not dismissing touring cars or Formula 3 GTs or anything like that in the UK, because I think each has its own aim, but with motorcycles as well, there is that spectacular element. It's why the people stand on corners rather than stand on straights. They like to see motorcycles crashing into the gravel, and the good thing about it is that...
Not if you've ever been a rider, though, because I always cringe when I see them going. I mean, it's great. It's in rude health. Fantastic start of the season. And, Larry, will you be reporting for us for the rest of the year
hopefully
as well?
Hopefully, John. Yeah, I'm only at the other end of a phone call here at the office in sunny North Allerton, which I know is not a million miles away from York.
My old stomping ground, mate. Yeah.
And we're happy to report up here from the frozen north, as and when. British Superbike Championship,
cold.
Absolutely fantastic. And it's round one out of the way, another 12 to go. If they're all as good as round one, then it'll be absolutely fantastic, John.
And thanks very much, Larry.
A lot of people, Larry, quickly won't know this, but it's not just radio and circuit commentaries that you're involved in, but also the print media. What have we got in the next issue coming up?
Yeah, you're quite right. We do wear a number of different caps down here. Certainly the circuit commentary is one thing that we do with my good friend Fred Clark, as well as a little bit of work with Sky Sports on their motorsport programme. But yeah, we edit a magazine called Motorcycle Racing Magazine, whereby the latest issue is now on sale with various interviews and features in there on British Superbikes, on MotoGP, on World Superbikes. There's an all expenses paid competition to win prizes to Mondello Park. We do a lot of the retro stuff with likes of Will Hartog and Brownies beat and the World Sidecar Championship, things like that. It's something that we enjoy doing, and we've had the very, very good fortune to do that over the past few years. And we also do a lot of work with the race programs for the various organizations as well. So, yeah, we wear many, many different caps. We also run a PR company as well, which looks after the interests of a number of teams and a number of riders. Very involved in the ANCRO Rally Championship, the MSA Hankook National Gravel Rally Championship, whereby we run the press office for them and look after a number of the riders and help with the organisation and various other things. So, yeah, pretty busy all round. You know, sleeping, it becomes a little bit of a problem at times.
I was going to say, and what do you do? And will you do your spare time? No, I was only kidding. Larry, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you throughout the rest of the season, mate. Best to everybody.
Thanks.
This weekend on Globecast, it's back to American Le Mans Series action as round three of the series heads out west. It's a first ever visit to the streets of Long Beach for the world-class ALMS teams, and you can hear it all on Globecast Radio. Our live qualifying show starts at 12:45 on Friday. Race day warm-up is at 4 in the afternoon on Saturday, and the whole race is live with our coverage starting at 11:30 on Saturday night. That's qualifying Friday, warm-up and the race on Saturday. The American Le Mans Series from the streets of Long Beach. It's all here and all live, only on Globecast Radio.
Live, the American Le Mans Series on Globecast Radio. Every lap, every race.
The Globecast Radio channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Well, we've still got another hour to fill, and goodness, we're not skimping in the second 60 minutes here on Midweek Motorsport, as later this evening we'll be welcoming another special guest to take the challenge that is uniquely Call My Huff. We'll also be talking about the start of the Porsche Super Cup this weekend with one of its drivers on the telephone. There's an ear on the oval from Declan Brennan, and we'll look back at Champ Car, which was at Las Vegas last weekend. First round of the series for them. And Tim Greer will be delving into what he loves best, the second division of open wheel motorsport, GP2, the preview. That's all still to come in hour two of this week's Midweek Motorsport.
The Globecast Radio channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Well, it's time to get across and to make sure that our transatlantic phone is still working. We've stretched the wire very tight this week after some technical problems last week. And I think in Worcester, Massachusetts, we can say hello and welcome to Midweek Motorsport to our ear on the ovals correspondent, none other than Mr. Declan Brennan.
Oh, I get a round of applause. Sean, just for you're a bit late. I've moved to Winchester just to make it easy for you. Even
very
though
funny.
Winchester, Massachusetts doesn't actually exist, I had to apply for town status as a town to make it easier for you.
Do you did you win any money on the Masters, mate? 175-1 he was at the start of the week.
You know what? I was actually cheering for Aaron Baddeley because his dad was Emerson, was Mario Andretti's crew chief in Champ Car in the 90s. But he didn't
do
well.
That is a very anoraki fact.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Declan would always come out with, though.
Yeah, which is why he'd be perfect for doing golf commentary.
Of course he would, yes.
Right. Let's start with the Indy 500, Declan.
Yes, the Indy 500. We do seem to have the prospect of a really tedious month upcoming, the month of May. Many years ago, the month of May was rather exciting because, you know, there'd be...
talking about generally. I mean, which this is not like your horoscope or anything like that. You know, Mars is in the vicinity of Venus, so May is going to be a bit tedious. We're talking specifically about the America's great race, the Indy 500,
yeah,
aren't we?
Which is going to be a bit tedious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, picture the scene, 50-60 drivers, haulers would arrive, you know, mm-hmm. come the start of May for free practice, and then the first weekend of qualifying, and then second weekend of qualifying and then bump day, and as you talked about before, people running up and down the grid trying to negotiate the use of a new car to get to the back of the top of the queue on bump day and to be on the bubble and to get out there, and as the sun was setting and the clock was winding down to bump your way into the field, and through the vagaries of qualifying you might have the fastest car of the entire month but you might be 33rd on the grid, blah 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 blah, all marvellous.
It was a ridiculously complicated qualifying process, wasn't it?
Thank you, sir.
It got silly towards the end when they had to fill the tube full of the blue liquid and then Arthur Ellis would get his dipstick out.
I never understood what those penguins were doing across that rotating disc with pieces of car being thrown at them. I never understood that at all.
You know, they're giving all that blue liquid. They actually sold it to the people who make ads for sanitary products.
Stop.
You know, because they cast that anyway.
Stop right now. Yeah, it was a bit complicated, but it was a tradition. It was a tradition, though, Dex, wasn't it?
And it's still a tradition, and it's still complicated, but it's going to be made slightly less complicated this year by the fact that we might be lucky to get 33 drivers to make, so there may not be any bumping.
How many, hang on a second, I saw 18 in the grid, in the paddock at St. Pete's a couple of weeks ago. We've got a couple more. Milka Duno is going to be racing later in the year. I'm not sure if she's going to be ready for Indy, is she? She's only coming into the series later in the year.
Well,
she's like Walls.
Well, it'll be interesting because the rookie acclimatisation testy thing is coming up soon, and we'll see how many rookies actually turn out for that, because, you know, arguably there won't be any. There might be one or two. We're in a peculiar position where, with a series that is struggling to get 20 drivers, suddenly Tony George has to go into his magic hat. If anybody familiar with football chants around the world will be familiar, no matter, say for example you're a fan of QPR and you like Kevin Gallen, the old Kevin Gallen's magic, he wears a magic hat. Well, I think this will have to be Tony George's magic, he wears a magic hat, because he's going to have to pull 13 to 14 drivers out of it with cars to get them onto the grid. That's only to fill the grid, don't forget. That's not even to add the additional drivers who then have to go through the tediousness of bump day.
It would be terrible, wouldn't it, imagine if they got 34 drivers and only one person got bumped. How naff would you feel?
That would just be
such an embarrassment, wouldn't it?
But it would also be embarrassment for them, because bump day would last one run. That person could keep going back to the top of the queue all day and drive around until they qualify. So the
only exciting part would be the last 5 minutes, wouldn't it?
It'd be like, you're not watching any NBA game ever.
That is just nonsense, isn't it?
It's whoever is unlucky enough not to be at the front of the queue when the clock reaches, I don't know, 90 seconds to go.
But don't forget, you may have to enter with another car, so it's about, you have to keep running around and borrowing chassis off people. So they literally would have to have, you know, there's one person trying to keep getting into the grid field. They might do 12 runs in a day. They need 12 extra chassis from different people.
The point about all this is, Dex, that there aren't 13 or 15 or 20 drivers in the wings. The cars probably exist. That wouldn't be a problem. The IRL chassis been around for long enough now, and there's enough of them lying about in various guises that people could get hold of and race. But there aren't the drivers. Certainly, there isn't the interest this year from the Champ Car field, which, in years past has bolstered the IRL cars at Indy. But I don't think there's going to be that much Champ Car interest this year, is there?
Well, there'll be none. So we've got for example, Michael Andretti will be back this year again, which I think is a terrific thing, because, you know, he wants to win it. He's never won it. There's only one, as we discussed last year, there's only one Andretti name and face on the Borg Warner Trophy, and that's the one time Mario won it in 1969. We have the bizarre situation where the people will be wheeled out again. There's the distinct possibility that somebody will be ringing the Fernandez organisation and begging them to put a team in.
Linton James?
Yes.
Abby Lyon Dyke Senior.
Well, you see, that's not as stupid as it sounds, unfortunately. But we've got to, you know, we might end up wheeling Al Unger Jr. back out, and we could see people like Max Pappas having another crack at it this year, like last year. But it's just, it's a sad state of affairs when when the world's arguably, and it is in many ways still one of the most fantastic events in the whole of racing, is just belittled so badly because, you know, we're in this embarrassing situation of having to literally, you know, send out emails to your friends to say, would any of you like to run in the Indy 500 this weekend?
The thing is, though, even if there wasn't this split in single-seater racing, if there was no split between IndyCar and Champ Car, you've still only got 35 drivers between the two championships at the moment.
Yeah, but you would rattle a few more out the woodwork, I think. And some of them, you know, the minor series drivers who've got a few quid or are looking to make, pardon the pun, a bit of an impact. So either, you know, the Indy Lights drivers and the Atlantic drivers, we've seen those people, again, jumping in and making the numbers up on the grid. So you might get, what do you reckon, Dex? You get about 40, maybe 42,
yeah,
43?
If the two series were combined, we'd probably get 40 to 45 drivers, I think, because, yeah, you'd get those, and you would get some of the, you know, the more recently, let's see, guys, I'm trying to think, obviously you get guys from the Indy Pro Series, you get Atlantic drivers, you get some of the guys who are maybe looking for rides this year, like the Patrick Carpentiers and yeah, people like that, you know, so there, I think they would, you would get, we'd get enough money, or enough drivers to make Bump Day interesting. But as it stands at the moment, the month of May will be massively tedious and will be just a love-in for ESPN. They'll literally be doing 24-hour-a-day interviews with Danica Patrick. Oh, I said her name. Sorry, that's 10 pounds in the swear box. So the woman who shall not be named.
T-O-W.
Yes.
That other woman.
Yes.
Okay.
No, the other woman is Sarah Fisher.
Well, she's the other woman.
That's another 10 pounds for you, Declan.
Yeah, I do apologise.
Right, let's move
John,
on. Yes.
We now have £20. That's enough to pay for you to go and see FIA GT.
Fantastic. See, Nigel Mansell make his comeback in the Scuderia Corsa at Silverstone, when, of course, we're all going to be at Thruxton watching real motor racing. Now, let's move on from open wheels, at least that type of open wheels. Do you want to have a bit of a chat about, while we're talking about this, about the other side of the open wheel split, and talk about Champ Car very quickly?
Yes, Champ Car. I'm very, very impressed with that track at Las Vegas.
I think that was the best part of it, because the car is clearly pants, isn't it?
The car is held together with sticky back plastic, and it's just, they really didn't test them enough. Or at all, quite frankly. And
7 days of testing, I think they had.
You know, Panos can't be blamed to some extent because, you know, they should have given them more time to really test this thing thoroughly. In many ways, the amount of them that...
Presumably, they didn't want them to test it because then people would have found out how rubbish it was and not bought them, allegedly.
Well, then, if they haven't bought them, then what would they have competed in? Fred Flintstone-type vehicles? But, you know, the
IndyCar.
The track itself, let's start with the track. The track has been universally acclaimed as being one of the best, if not the best, street circuit in the world.
I did think that the tunnels were a bit pants, and that silly Mickey Mouse chicane going into the last corner tunnel was nonsense.
What I did like is that on several of the corners, the exits of the corners had been widened, and the straights were funneled down a little bit, but the exits were wide enough to allow quite decent cornering speeds and... thank goodness, the opportunity to dive inside people and not push somebody, like, dive inside somebody and touching them on most street circuits means the other guy will end up in the tyres. But in this one, it did seem to have enough room. It's very fast. The Indy cars as well the Champ cars were touching 185 on the fastest parts of the circuit, which is fabulous. But the irony is, I've got the Las Vegas Sun's website staring at me right now, and they did a little comparison between the Grand Prix of Long Beach, Monaco, and Vegas. And they're slightly down on it because I think they feel that the downtown area of Vegas where it ran was a bit dowdy. Now, I want you to hold that thought, John, because but one of the things they said, for example, was Monaco Grand Prix, Nouvelle Chicane, Grand Prix of Long Beach, Shoreline Straight, Vegas Grand Prix, Adult Bookstore Corner.
But hang on a second. Think back a few years to when Chris Pook started the Long Beach Grand Prix. And what was that area of Long Beach?
It
was the Red Light District. And one of the great pictures in the book, The History of the Long Beach, is Chris Pook covering up the XXX signs on the adult bookstores down what was then the start-finish straight, which is now where the Western Hotel is.
I'm so glad, because I was about to ask you that, but you preempted me. That's exactly right, exactly right. And I think I'd like to think that Vegas will stick with this, because I think that they have a great opportunity with this track to produce a really, really fantastic event. It's a 2.2 mile circuit. It's a long. It's not Mickey Mouse. It's not like the car park of Caesar's Palace was in a, you know, for Formula One and for IndyCar in the early 80s. It's a terrific circuit. In fact, I can see sports cars racing there quite comfortably.
You'd have to take that chicane out, and the entrance to the pits needs working out, because where there's those two bits of the bridge where you go under one span, which is wider than the other, that's just a little bit that just worried me a bit, and it was too dark for me under those bridges as well.
It did remind me of a street circuit in a video game to some extent. In some ways, because it was very,
because it was very wide,
of the width. It was a street circuit that had an enormous width in case, which is terrific, absolutely terrific. So, yeah, in terms of Champ Cars, their location was a great start for the series in terms of that, but their immediate location, i.e. the place in which the drivers were operating, i.e. the new car, left a little bit to be desired.
Great result for Will Power, first Australian to win a Champ Car World Series event. Kudos to Catherine Legg, who was sitting third with about 10 minutes to go till she had a mechanical problem, and I think possibly a late pit stop as well. Lots of people having problems with fuel rigs.
Well, the fuel rigs, they couldn't get all of the fuel into the car. It's a 34-gallon tank, I believe, and they could only get 22 gallons in because of an issue with the components on the fuel rig. So... yes, it
didn't help that some people forgot to turn the fuel on at their rigs as well, which was one of the things that I saw happen at the weekend.
They had problems with the starters, where they were told to disable those before the start.
They were causing some electrical interference with other systems.
With the onboard cameras.
Which meant they didn't really need them, which would have taken an enormous amount of weight off the car as well. It
doesn't matter when it's a single make series, though, does it? The good thing for me about the whole debacle of the lack of reliability for the cars was it was pretty much universal. Nobody had an absolutely clean run. So no one got a massive advantage, and I think that's probably why we're not hearing too many complaints. Also, the other thing was...
we're not hearing too many complaints because there were no drivers in it.
Well, okay. Sebastian Bourdais is human. I mean, fantastic. He messes up in final qualifying, puts the car on the wall, starts from the back, and then manages to either drive into or get hit or hit the wall several times, causing himself puncture, broken steering arm, and then finally hitting the wall and parking the car for good because they didn't have enough spares and they were worried that he might take too much damage.
This is Sebastian Bourdais we're talking about. This is remarkable.
Yes. This is the man who's won everything in living memory.
It's the first time in several years that Sebastian Bourdais hasn't been leading the points.
Yes, I've got to say, I'm looking at the points right now, and Justin Wilson has 7 points, Sebastian Bourdais has 8. Wilson a point ahead of Dan Clark, you know, who crashed out on the opening lap. Taking Graeme Rahal with him. Has to be said...
That's not true, actually. He went on beyond that.
Well, he did recover.
He crashed again separately on his own.
He crashed on his own later at turn four.
But Graeme Rahal had a rather fraught introduction to Champ Car, having crashed heavily in practice and then really not only getting as far as about the second corner in the race.
He wasn't a happy bunny, was he?
He's a senior. He's a senior in high school. I would imagine as he was driving along on a Sunday, he was probably thinking, now, did I do me trigonometry homework?
You know, he couldn't hire a car. He had to have someone buy because he's not old enough.
You have to be 25 to hire a car.
Isn't that fantastic?
If a professional racing driver walked into my office to hire a car, I would say, no, I've read enough stories about what you lot do to hire cars, you're not getting one.
Yes, and on that I think we'll move on. So, Las Vegas, a hit. The car obviously must try harder if we're giving them a school report, as in young Mr. Rahal. The racing itself, when it was green, was pretty good, but I felt that the race was rather broken up. The whole... the whole rhythm of the race, Dex, was rather broken up because people were all on different strategies. They didn't know if they'd got fuel in or not. And frankly, that made, for me, the race virtually impossible to follow. Even though I had live timing and scoring up, I never really knew what was going on because I had no idea who had fuel in the car. And actually, I ended up watching the Ireland cricket game instead.
Well, that's lovely. Now, the next circuit they go to... Stop talking about cricket. The next circuit they go to is Long Beach. Very similar to Las Vegas.
No, not similar to Las Vegas at all. It's narrow, it's shorter, there's nowhere to pass, and you might as well call it a street procession instead of a street race.
And then they go on to Houston.
Much wider, much bumpier, but still another street race, effectively, although it's in a car park. They have, I'm told they've changed the layout of the track since last year.
Have they changed the position of the pits since last year?
So we might actually be able to get some reports from there when we're there.
That's not my thought, but
hopefully... I think that what they would have to do is they'd have to change fundamentally the direction in which the drivers are racing on account of the fact that the Champ car only has a fuel port on one side.
So if they used the pits as they were last year, the Champ cars would pull into their pits, would have to be put up onto a trolley jack, rotated 180 degrees, refuelled, rotated back again, taken off the trolley jack, and then released.
Well, luckily...
Or you could just run round the other side with the hose.
Yeah, but it's a massive hose. But if it's dragging over the top of the driver, he wouldn't be able to see. If it's split, he'd be... Anyway, luckily, Panos are rectifying that and sending the parts, we believe, this week in order for the guys to rig the car on the other side.
Well, given that nobody actually managed to get a full tank of fuel in the cars, it's probably a moot point, isn't it? You might as well just, you know, get them to stop at the local petrol station down the road and fill it up on a nozzle. It would actually be better.
Well, in the street circuit, that is entirely possible.
I'm looking at the track, the Jagflow Speedway, as it's now being called, at Reliant Park, and it's showing a remarkably similar look to what it did last year, which it's just over a mile and a half, isn't it? And it's very bumpy. And as I might be racing there, I'm a bit worried about that. I was told it was going to be opened out a bit.
Now, what will you be racing?
Mazda MX-5.
Oh dear, in a celebrity race?
No, in the Pro Series, straight after the American Le Mans Series on Saturday night.
Oh my God, who's going to do the commentary on it then?
I think they probably want me to do it from the car.
We will get Jeremy Shaw to commentate on that.
If that happens, okay, fine. Right, let's move on to the ovals then, Dex. No Easter weekend off for the good old boys?
Well, the Busch Series raced, but the big boys were off, which was nice in a way because we ended up with a Busch race almost entirely bereft of bushwhackers.
Apart from Carl Edwards, David Reutemann, Dave Blaney, Reagan Smith, Scott Wimmer, Bliss, David Stremme, JJ Yaley.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Bushwhackers, you might win something.
And but most of those guys, in point of fact, are doing a full Busch Series race.
Yes.
They're not just dropping in
Carl
and out.
Edwards, so, you know, Carl Edwards is, in all fairness, so it is a... It's perfectly acceptable for Carl to be winning races, but I think what's significant, good on him, Carl won. But what is significant is the cars in the Busch race that finished second, third, and fourth, all Toyotas.
And that's Toyota, interesting, isn't it?
Dave Blaney second in the championship, but then again, he's 321 points behind the Edwards in the Busch series. He might as well be 4 million points behind because you might as well give him the title now. But so very solid weekend for Toyota, and this was in the car of yesterday, of course, or the car of yesterday's shape, even though the Busch series it's irrelevant. So moving along quickly to next weekend, it's the Samsung 500.
Samsung a new sponsor to Nextel Cup, are they?
They've been coming in over the last couple of years, yes, because Samsung are one of the people who are very, very strongly tipped to be the heir apparent to Busch in terms of title sponsorship of that series.
Oh, really?
So people say, yeah, you'll be a Samsung whacker next season, which doesn't really have the same... it doesn't have the same cachet.
And I'd like to spend a whole season just messing about in Samsung.
Yes.
And, you know, if you say that about the current season, it's obviously makes us giggle a lot more.
Now, before, I think this is a nice opportunity. You know, we've had a week off to have a look at the championship standings in Nextel Cup.
Right.
Which makes an interesting reading. Jeff Gordon hasn't won a race, but he's in the lead.
Hmm.
Jeff Burton hasn't won a race. Second. Jimmy Johnson.
By just 28 points as well, yeah. So nothing in it there.
Jimmy Johnson has won 3 races, 60 points behind.
Yes.
But if you look down again, one of the things I'm quite enjoying is if you look down to 16th place,
mm-hmm.
a total of 25 points off the chase at this point, Juan Montoya.
And already pocketed $897,000.
Not bad, is it?
No. And interestingly, Mark Martin has won more in 15th position and 337 points behind the leader. He's won more money than anybody above him. 1.6 million.
And probably he's missed best the last 2 races.
Yeah, I know.
So maybe if the more races you miss, the more points you get. I don't understand the point system anyway, I do think we'll see a severe shake-up in the points this weekend because some of the people who've struggled, like Casey Kane, who we can see down in, he's in, 30-odd point.
Mm-hmm.
He's struggling massively. He's the reigning champion at Texas, which, as you may or may not remember, is a 1.5-mile, 24-degree banking Super Bowl. It's just ludicrously quick. Kane won last year. He needs to, you know, get a foothold in the championship, and this is the sort of track that could really work for him. Although being so fast, I could see Montoya reveling in a track like this.
Montoya, of course, leading the rookie standings from David Reagan by it's not that far away. So he's only 30 points up on him, so that's nothing. But then it's quite a long way back before you find another rookie, and in fact that's Paul Menard, and he's the better
not
part.
Not really
of
a rookie, is he?
No, but he's listed as a rookie with David Reiterman, and they're 400 points back.
Yeah,
already,
so
already.
You do think that barring a disaster that between Reagan and Montoya the rookie title is going to come down to those two, and you do feel that Montoya I think has got more chance. I've been giving this a lot of thought. I think Montoya with the two road circuits that they have to race on still, I think Montoya is going to be able to consistently finish where he has been. He's been finishing 10th to 20th most weekends. He's been very, very consistent, and that's the reason he's 16th in points. I think he's going to be able to do that on the ovals, and he's going to pick up a lot of points on the technical tracks, particularly on the road courses. So,
do you think he does have an advantage on the road courses, though, Dex? Because everything that he's ever driven on a road course is going to be fundamentally different from a £3,500 1950s architecture car.
Well, look how well he raced when he had to come back from mid-pack in Mexico.
Mm.
You know, and he really
True.
Was class of the field. He was, and that was in a race stacked with road course specialists like mm-hmm. Boris Said and Ron Fellows,
mm.
and and his teammate, of course, who Scott Pruitt and Marcus Ambrose. So I don't think I think he has a marked advantage, and he'll know the car better by then. By the time they get to Sears Point later in the year.
Are we going to see Mark Martin back this weekend?
That's a good question, and I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I believe, yes, I've got to double check that, but I know he's missed the last two. I do believe he is racing this weekend.
Well, if he's not, clearly he'll have more points and more money
at
the end.
Yeah, he'll be leading the standings after next week, even if he's not racing.
Well, he could certainly be in the top 10. Leading, I think, is pushing it a bit.
So Bush, as he says, so we've got Bush and Cup running at Texas. Texas, of course, as we say every year, famed for making champ car racers dizzy.
Yes. Now, one of the things that we can look forward to on Lowe's Motor Speedway, a couple of races, is the All-Star Weekend. And one of the things that I love about this is the crew chiefs get to drive.
Yes, they've just beginning to start pushing this on ESPN, doing a lot of coverage now because they've got their NASCAR coverage. They're doing dedicated shows, and they began to talk about this last week. And the crew chiefs will be racing.
And they're racing in what they call Thunder Roadsters, which are basically a bit like Legends cars.
Yes.
And they will be all in the paint schemes of the Nextel Cup cars that the crew chiefs work on. How fantastic is that?
That is fantastic.
It's going to be great. And there's some big old lads in that.
Do you think that Dale Earnhardt, who has a propensity for changing his crew chief, may hire a professional driver for his crew chief?
No, I think that actually all they'll be doing in that case is they'll have to switch drivers mid-race. It's a good job Fatback McSwain isn't going to be running, because he's enormous. He'd have a serious problem in terms of weight
advantage.
Getting into a legend, yes.
I just can't wait for that, and it's going to be covered on Speed as well, which is very good news.
Well, Speed do have the entire weekend's proceedings.
Oh, basically Speed becomes All Star Weekend TV.
Yes.
Right the way, you know, from. The start halfway through the week, it's phenomenal how much
there are a lot of people who would argue that Speed is basically a NASCAR channel all the time anyway.
Well, it's getting that way, but it's not complete yet.
No,
but
it does occasionally have tele shopping and Jackson Barrett auctions.
Yes, yeah. and it does show MotoGP on Thursday afternoons at 3 o'clock, so I'm happy.
It was interesting that they in fact tape delayed the American Le Mans Series race from St. Pete's, because the last 2 hours of the Jackson Barrett auction needed to be shown live.
You know what? There are things that I don't understand in life, and that's one of them.
I'll tell you what I don't understand. Chinese writing.
Yeah.
Straight away. Right, anything else, Dex? We haven't had any juicy gossip for a while.
Well, we should really talk about the Kentucky Speedway suit, shouldn't we? A little bit.
Yes, we should.
It has been sort of on the back burner since late 2005 when we first talked about it, but it's beginning to sort of bubble to the surface again nicely.
There's been lots of debate about who owns NASCAR, hasn't there?
Well, it does seem that nobody does, based on the evidence being heard in the hearing.
Nobody's
whose
name isn't France.
Who do you think owns NASCAR, John?
Bernie Eggleston, I think, based on the fact that he's managed to make a fortune out of pretending to own F1 when he didn't own it in the first place, I think he's the obvious candidate to own NASCAR.
Declan, who do you think owns NASCAR?
Well, seeing as he's to claim responsibility for everything, I'd say the INLA own NASCAR.
That's quite funny. Although terribly not politically correct.
The answer I was hoping one of you might say was Brian France. But
no, don't be silly.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
Because the
Federation
judge has said he hasn't.
Yes, that's
any
right.
Stock in that.
It does seem that NASCAR have an enormous amount of stock in ISC, and the ISC is entirely owned by members of the France family.
Correct.
So
this is how it works. NASCAR has a chairman and chief executive officer, who are both Brian France. But it's owned by Lisa France Kennedy, who's his sister, and Jim France, who's his uncle. Now, ISC, which is a completely separate organisation and has no ties at all to NASCAR...
Can I cough and say a rude word at the same time there when you said that?
No.
is run by a chairman...
Yes.
...who is... who is that? So that's Jim France.
Yeah.
And
Uncle
Executive.
Jim.
It's run by President, who is Lisa France Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Yeah.
And the Chief Executive Officer is Jim France.
Uncle Jim.
Neither of them own any shares in ISC, but they obviously do own shares in NASCAR. And the ownership of ISC is mostly with Brian France.
Basically, yeah. let's cut to the chase here. Basically, these two organisations are totally and utterly control NASCAR and NASCAR scheduling and what tracks get where and who gets to race where and when. Hence, the plaintiff in this case, Kentucky Speedway, basically saying, you're a cartel, we want a race, you won't let us have one. It's completely antitrust. It's not fair. You've conspired to fundamentally...
keep us out of the game.
Yeah, push them out of the game.
Now, isn't it though, Dex, in fact, that part of the submission as to why Kentucky can't be let in and have a race, was basically said, we're a cartel and we're not letting anybody in we don't want to let in. Quite remarkably.
Despite the fact that this judge has come out with the evidence that Brian France has no ownership of NASCAR, Brian France said in 2005, I have a significant interest in the industry, financial aspect of NASCAR. I hope to have that for many, many years to come.
It's just all very odd, and something is going to give here. It's very difficult to see exactly how this is going to fall, but I do believe, you know, Kentucky aren't going to win this. This is based on nothing more than a good feeling that Kentucky will lose this case on account of them taking on some very, very powerful people. But I'm saying that NASCAR and ISC are having a bit of trouble with tracks right now, insofar as they tried to persuade the denizens of New York to let them have a track at Staten Island. They were told to go away.
Pretty comprehensively told to go away as well.
Yes, they were. They were then focused their attentions on a public-private partnership in Washington State for a track there. And again, they've been told to go forth and multiply to some extent. And the quote from the Washington State Treasurer, Mr. Mike Murphy, is as following. We might as well dispense with calling these things public-private partnerships because they really aren't. The private side gets rich, the public side gets screwed. So, you know,
I like civil servants like that, that's good. All right, Dex, very quickly, take you back to this weekend. Let's have a couple of tips. Texas Motor Speedway, pretty much flat all the way around. Interesting race. Who's going to win it?
I'm going to tip Casey Kane again because he's got to get it right sometime.
All right, Dex.
I think Montoya's going to have a very, very good race this weekend.
All right, mate, that's this weekend, Texas. Declan, back with us next Wednesday for another edition of Ear on the Oval here on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
With John Hindhoff. Broadcast Radio.
This weekend on Globecast, it's back to American Le Mans Series action as round three of the series heads out west. It's a first ever visit to the streets of Long Beach for the world-class ALMS teams, and you can hear it all on Globecast Radio. Our live qualifying show starts at 9:45 on Friday. Race day warm-up is at 4 in the afternoon on Saturday. And the whole race is live with our coverage starting at 11:30 on Saturday night. That's qualifying Friday, warm-up and the race on Saturday. The American Le Mans Series from the streets of Long Beach. It's all here and all live, only on Globecast Radio.
Live. The American Le Mans Series on Globecast Radio. Every lap, every race.
Hi.
Hello, is that Damien?
It is indeed.
What have you got in your mouth now?
I'm sorry. I'm chewing.
Stop chewing, you're about to do an interview.
Declan Brennan has stayed with us. He's in Massachusetts, somewhere beginning with a W. The place I can never remember.
Yes, that's very true. I'm still here.
And we have another Irishman, and I'm not even sure where he is, and I'm not sure he knows where he is half the time, to be honest.
I can be anywhere you want me to be.
Damien Faulkner, welcome to the programme.
Thanks, John.
You should be on your way to Bahrain at the moment, really, shouldn't you?
Well, I will be shortly.
Ah, right,
yeah.
Good.
When you're sleeping tonight, I'll be on the way.
Fantastic stuff. Now, first of all, we have to say congratulations on snagging a Super Cup drive, Porsche Michelin Super Cup, 11 races, apart from Bahrain and Indianapolis, all in Europe supporting Grand Prix. So, that's a step up for you from the Porsche Carrera Cup Great Britain, which you've won the last couple of years, but it's a great step up and you must be very excited about it. Tell us how it all came about, will you?
Yeah, thanks, John. Pretty excited, all right. Just one little thing. It's we're not doing Indianapolis this year. We're doing Turkey instead.
Ah, right.
So,
okay.
All European, but for Turkey and Bahrain. So, really excited. I've joined the Lechner team, which
Walter Lechner, the
Walter
old
Lechner. Yes.
Fantastic. He's a good old guy, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. What a will to win he has. I mean, it's completely unparalleled, you know, from anybody I've worked with in the past. But you know, I'm really, really happy. They are the championship winning team from 2005, and you know, we have high expectations. This 1 year ago, actually, I did Bahrain with Walter and his team. Just to answer your question about how it came about, and we've kept in touch all through the year, so it's a logical step, I think, to do the Super Cup.
Before I get that
Works Porsche Drive.
You gave us the sneak preview on that, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously a lot of hard work going through the winter. You and I have spoken away from the radio station a couple of times, and this was very much in your sights, wasn't it, to move up to Super Cup or to some other form of sports car racing?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a will there to win, to go as far as I can in sports car racing, ultimately to become a works driver, a factory driver with a manufacturer. You know, and to be a professional, to continue to be a professional driver. I'd cut my teeth in with Porsche in the Carrera Cup in GB, and stayed on for a second year to defend the title, because really I was being loyal to my sponsor as he was being loyal to me.
Never easy to defend, to be honest, DF, and you did it.
Yeah, well, that's what they always say, and I suppose it's not. It was the first time I've ever defended any title that I've won.
Mm-hmm.
The rest having moved on the following year, but I mean, whilst it wasn't a spectacular year, it was constructive in that
mm-hmm.
we won the championship, and that's really the ultimate aim, to win the championship. So. Mm-hmm. Moving on now to the Super Cup, there's, you know, greater competition, greater depth of competition, and it's going to be tougher. And, you know, I'm just really excited to join such a front-running team as the Lechner team.
Damien, the car is the same spec now, isn't it, as the GB car?
Yeah, I think there's just two differences. The biggest difference is are the brakes.
You get the ceramic brakes, do you?
Yeah, they're carbon fibre brakes, so they're really, really good. Much the same as what Formula One use, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the braking distances are shorter. And I think the only other difference is a different exhaust to perhaps make them a little bit louder, because I think there are restrictions imposed in the British cars.
That's an interesting point that Declan brings up there, because we have seen people up until the last couple of years find it very difficult, good drivers, find it very difficult to jump into a Super Cup car, even if they've driven a National Series before, and actually make an impression, because the teams and the drivers, there's a lot of drivers in that category who've been there for a long time and who clearly have a lot of knowledge. Obviously we've changed the spec of the car over the last few years. Lechner is, you know, one of the better teams anyway, but also you must be slightly I suppose buoyed by the fact that Richard Westbrook did so well, in fact won the championship last year when he jumped into that championship from the UK, from being a UK winner a couple of years ago. In fact, he was the last bloke to win the championship before you.
Yeah, well, I think it's a testament to the Carrera Cup in GB that it was very competitive, and that it was certainly at the front, that it was very, very strong.
Mm.
We saw last year on a couple of occasions where Richard Westbrook came back to the Carrera Cup to do a couple of one-off rounds, and certainly I out-qualified him pretty spectacularly at Thruxton when I got mm-hmm. pole. That was very, very satisfying, because we had probably the leading works Porsche driver on the grid as well, Sacha Masson. And so to out-qualify both of those and then go on and win the race was very satisfying. But there's definitely a greater depth of talent in the Super Cup. There's something like 30 cars or thereabouts on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, if there's 20% of professional drivers in the Carrera Cup, there's 80% professional drivers in the Super Cup, you know, so it's really strong. It's claimed to be one of the most competitive one mech series in the world. This is its 15th year. Mm-hmm. And these cars as well are unique in that basically where the engine is situated in the car makes them unique over any other racing car.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a specific driving style required to make them go really fast. And also they're really, really easy to overdrive. And coming from single-seaters where it's like you just hammer the car into the turns as fast as you can and not so much worry about the exit speed. Here you've got to really pay attention to exit speeds because we have 402 brake horsepower. We have a lot of traction because of where the engine is out over the back axle and the width of the rear tyres. And of course,
flat shift on the sequential box.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's not a single seater. It's a Porsche. It's a sports car, and so it's higher up. It's got a high, you know, the roll center's higher, and it's also there's a lot more movement, and it's slower movement than because there's more weight transfer. So it's a lot different from single seaters, and that's perhaps touches on some of the reasons why. Some people might struggle when they get into them because it does require a specific technique.
Sorry, go on, Dex.
No, I was going to say, Dane, so with that in mind...
I'm useless.
What would a successful season amount to this year? You know, obviously the aim overall will be to win the title, but what would be an acceptable... position in the championship and this season coming.
It's really hard to predict. I don't like predictions in any case. But I mean, I don't know. I suppose to answer your question, Dex, going out now to Bahrain, we have two races there, and I would be pretty happy with two podiums, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't tested together as a championship unit.
Have you actually been in the car, Damien?
Yes, we've done some testing in Bahrain.
Okay, good.
Whilst the others were in Hungary. But we did our Hungary test before the end of last year when Walter invited me out there, before the end of my GB season. So, it'll be interesting to see where we all pan out because, as I say, we haven't tested with the opposition yet, so we don't really know where we are, but, you know, we suspect that we'll be somewhere there in the hunt and... We'll definitely be aiming for it. Like I say, the team are really competitive, and there's a great push, and it's amazing the difference. And just when you move teams, I've had a very good, successful 2 years with the English team that I've just been with, Team Parker. But when you move into the Super Cup with a championship-winning team, I mean the urgency and the sort of the will to win. It just seems to be on a different level. You could test, think you're doing well, and the engineer will come and say, "You're too slow. We need to try something else." So it's a bit.
Well, that's good, isn't it? I mean, that drives you on as well, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I've never been one to lie back. I've always been, if anything, perhaps a nuisance and wanting to drive forward and wanting to be the best, and you know it's not always plain sailing, but you know, to have a team that sort of echo your wants, then it's great, you know.
Very quickly, because don't want to keep you too long.
You're paying for the call. I'm here all day.
You're a professional race driver. You think you're paying for the call. We did it as reverse charges.
I can't afford it.
Now, I said right at the beginning of this that there are a number of people who've been in the Super Cup for quite a while. Indeed, there are people who are almost career drivers in the Super Cup. They've been there, do other things as well, but they clearly are making money and driving full-time in the Super Cup. Now, whilst that wouldn't be a bad thing to do, I know that is not where you want to be forever. So, I mean, is this a means to an end, DF? I mean, is it a stepping stone to something else?
I would think so. Yeah, I think you're pretty accurate there. I mean, I don't know how many people are earning money. I know I'm not one of those lucky ones this year anyway. I think it's difficult, you know, it's such a sort of a, it's a one mix series, and, you know, of course there are sponsors, but I think, you know, looking at the bigger picture, I think sports car, the real sports car scene as we know it, is where I want to be.
Plenty of people's made the jump, haven't they? That's the thing.
Yeah, and this is a good, I think, a very, you know, high profile platform from which to springboard off, hopefully, anyway. And like I said before at the beginning of the interview, you know, to be a Porsche Works driver is definitely high on my list. Of ambitions,
and we haven't had any many English speaking works drivers for a while, have we?
Well, Pat Long speaks relatively good English. He's an American.
True enough, and well remembered.
Sorry, John.
I apologise to Pat. No, that's very good, actually. I must apologise to Pat when I see him.
I always thought his English was good anyway.
That's better than mine.
Mike Buckenfeller's English is not bad either.
No, I know, but they're normally Germanic or European drivers, is
what
I'm saying.
Yeah, you're right. You've got Romain Dumas, you've got Stefan Ortelli, you've got Sasha Masson, you did have Lucas Lohr, Mike Rockenfeller, they've both moved to Audi. You've got, I think, is it, well, you have Mark Lieb, and also the one of the Super Cup drivers from last year, the guy who finished second, incidentally, became a Porsche Works driver this year ahead of Richard Westbrook. So it's not an easy task to become a Porsche Works driver, and I don't really know what's required, but, you know, it's got to be where everyone wants to go. You know, to be employed by a manufacturer, especially as one as prestigious as Porsche, is definitely the main aim.
And your competition includes more refugees, shall we say, or at least more people who have moved onward and upward from the British series than ever before.
Yeah, there's a
bunch of them, isn't there?
Yeah. I believe there's probably three or four, I think, which is going to leave it all very easy now for Timothy Harvey, isn't it?
Hang on, there's you.
You think if Harvey paid them all to go and do the system?
There's Williams, Quiff, you, and Richard that I can think of straight off the top of my head. So
yeah.
there's four. I mean, Richard and you know, you've been old sparring partners in the past, so there's clearly going to be a continuation, a rekindling of that competitive urge between you two.
I hope he's not that quick.
Do you think?
That's wishful thinking. He's going to be at the front, definitely.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, was he not quickest? He was one of the quickest in the tests at the Hungaroring.
There was mention of four drivers. However, there was no official time, so no one really knows.
Yeah, right.
But he's going to be, for sure, like he's going to be up there, you know. And I've got to make it my business to be up there with them.
Well, listen, mate, we wish you all the best. I can't tell you how pleased I was when I got the news, when I got the wee text from you a couple of months ago, letting us know that it was all signed, sealed and delivered. Congratulations. It's only what you deserve. And when you come back and talk to us throughout the season, good, bad or indifferent, please.
Of course. Absolutely. I'm here at your disposal anytime.
Midweek Motorsport
with John Hindhoff.
Low-cast Radio.
That's very low.
That's because I've dipped it already.
All right, I couldn't hear it when you first started playing it.
No, you couldn't.
Do you want to do that again?
Yes.
Just re-cue the jingle. Well, we've had such a fantastic array of guests and such great chat that we've almost run out of time tonight. So I'm afraid, and I am very sad to say, no time for Call My Hoof this week.
Oh dear.
Tim, what can I tell you, mate? People just talked and, you know, something had to be sacrificed. However,
we just played the music instead. So, we've sacrificed Call My Half,
Yes, but I do want you to have a quick word about GP2, because we said we'd give you 10 minutes and you haven't got that from
Yes, well, there is a GP2 preview later on this week here on Globecast Radio, so do tune into that if you're at all interested in GP2. We will be mentioning the latest young driver to join the championship, who, of course, is Hoping Sung, and the others... The other 21 drivers that will be taking part, sorry, 25 other drivers taking part this year that we know of so far.
Can I just ask you, I mean, what sort of state is GP2 in this year? I mean, is it looking good?
Healthy state, yes. Yeah? There's some very good drivers. It's going to be a very interesting year because there's no obvious favourite at the start of the season like we've had in the last couple of years.
And I was going to say, that's quite unusual, isn't it?
It is. So we shall see what happens.
Who's coming back? Just quickly, you've got. I mean, we've got Pizzonia's back in it, isn't he?
Pizzonia is doing it. Yes.
Surely he's got to be a bit of a favourite, given his background.
He's got to be a favourite, but then you've also got Giorgio Pantano.
Yes, another name I recognise as
well. Timo Glock. Both of them ex Formula One and ex Champ Car drivers.
What about, did I read somewhere the other day that Riccardo Kato Rizzati has pulled out?
Yes, he's the one that has pulled out to allow a seat to be found for Hoping Chung.
Ah, right.
He's going to be doing the Renault World Series by Renault Series instead.
Powered by Nissan. Now, BCN have have signed another ex-Formula One driver, Sakon Yamamoto.
Indeed.
So, there's some class in GP2 this year, isn't there?
Well, I think the less said about Sakon's Formula One career,
right,
the better.
Okay, yes, but there is some experience.
There's also some youth as well. Javier Villa, still, I think, the youngest driver in GP2. It's his second season, though, and his English has improved a lot since last year. He's one of the drivers we'll be talking to in our GP2 season preview, which you can hear later on this week. And also...
Where can we find it? I mean, is that on the website? Have you got the times on the website?
You'll have the details of all the times of that programme. The first transmission of that is Thursday night, which is tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
We've got the Le Mans series preview, haven't
yes,
we?
Yes, you've got six more chances to hear that if you missed it when it debuted yesterday. They are tomorrow at 10 and 8, Friday at 2, 1 and 6, and Saturday morning at 8.
Okay, that's the Le Mans series, which starts this weekend at Monza. Join myself, Graham Goodwin, and a number of the drivers as we look forward to what is possibly the best-kept secret in international motor racing. You need to play the music again, I think, for the end of the show, Tim, don't you?
I don't think we've got time. I think we just have to say goodbye.
From Tim Gray in London and John Hindhoff in Wellingborough, that was Midweek Motorsport. Don't forget the podcast, the download on demand. It's all at www.0157.org, and we'll be back next week live from, well, all over the place, 8 o'clock UK time, for another edition of Midweek Motorsport. Bye for now.
There's no other channel that fills its airtime with so much coverage of cars and motorsport as Globecast Radio.
Globecast Radio.
Sky Channel 0157 and on the web 0157.org.
Globecast Radio.